It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, a story of life-changing travel adventures. But first, Iowa City-based stand-up comedian Nathan Timmel spends a lot of time on the road. When his daughter turned one, he started dedicating some of the hours he was spending in mediocre hotel rooms around the country to writing letters to the little girl he was missing very much at home. Those letters turned into a book. It's called It's Okay to Talk to Animals and Other Letters from Dad. And Nathan Timmel is here with me in the studio this morning. Hello, Nathan.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And I've been monitoring your Twitter feed this morning. I have a feeling that you and I have very different agendas for today's conversation.
I have a multitude of topics that I tweeted out we'd be talking about. I don't think we're going to get to all of them, but we were going to take calls to answer questions such as Russia. Can you see it from your house?
Right. So I think maybe we'll stick to fatherhood.
Fair enough.
The book. But, you know, we'll see where it goes. When you started writing these letters to your daughter, Hillary, how did that idea come about?
It was not my idea, and it was my wife's idea, kind of, but it wasn't her idea. I read Norman Lear's book, and he said his idea for All in the Family was stolen. He took it from a British television show, and that's the same thing here. My wife was online, and she read where someone wrote his or her child a letter to read in the future, and she said, you should do that, only you shouldn't write one letter. You should write to her every week you're away from home doing comedy. So it was more a project I got assigned than something I sat down and said, you know what would be really nice if I wrote letters to my daughter. It didn't happen that way. This was orders.
But what sparked your imagination about it?
I just always like to write, and I'm not very good with fiction writing. So writing, compiling words and putting them into a readable fashion from everyday experiences is something I like to do anyway. So that was basically it. I could, if something exciting or interesting happened that week, I would write about that. If I couldn't come up with anything there, I would think back to my life and what I think would be relevant for her to read, and I would write about that.
Did you set yourself a goal that you would write something to her every time you were away from home?
Not really set a goal, but you sort of mentioned in passing the hotel rooms. When you're on the road as a comedian, you have 22 hours a day to kill. You're on stage, well, sometimes even more, 23 hours. If it's a Thursday night, there's one show. So you get to your hotel and you sit and you do nothing, and you can either watch television or try and be productive. So it wasn't a matter of, okay, I must sit down and write. It was more a matter of, oh my God, what am I going to do with my time? I can either be productive or I can watch television. So I chose to try and be productive.
Before you had your daughter, what were you using those hours for?
Writing other books and stories. And I have a slew of nonsense available for the Kindle. Like, they're called Kindle Singles, little 99-cent mini books. So I'm always writing. I'm always trying to be it just depends on where the focus
right.
is at any given time.
A new avenue
yep.
for you. I would love for you to read from one of the letters toward the beginning of the book. It kind of explains the title of the book as well, and it'll give us a flavor for what the book's like.
Sure. Dear Hillary, by now you are aware enough to see that not only do I speak and sing to you, I also tend to carry on conversations and sing to both our four-legged housemates, Simon the cat and Kitty the doggy. A quick aside, doggy is currently your go-to word for all things furry. When you see Simon, you point and squeal, doggy. When you see a bunny, squirrel, or guinea pig, you point and squeal, doggy. And when you see Kitty, you grow quite animated and squeal, doggy. So something in you does recognize which one of the many creatures you label doggy is actually a dog, but it doesn't prevent you from calling anything with four legs doggy. Anyway, because you are a toddler, things that might not make sense to you still make sense to you. That doesn't make sense, but case in point, how you see me interact with animals. Daddy talks and sings to me, and that makes me happy. Daddy talks and sings to Simon and Kitty, so that must make them happy. And maybe it does, but who knows? The thing is, I believe most people talk and sing to animals when they are children. It's just that some people allow that side of them to wither and fade as they age. When I was younger, I read an interview, or maybe a book jacket, I don't remember. It contained a quote by Burke Breathed. People ask me why I talk to animals, and the only reason is because they appear to be listening.
Nathan Timmel reading from his book, It's Okay to Talk to Animals and Other Letters from Dad. And from the title of the book and the concept of the book, that was kind of the thing that I was expecting when I opened the book. That's very sweet. you didn't stick with that tone throughout the entire book. How did you decide what kind of tone you would take? And was that confusing for you to figure out who you were writing to?
Confusing, yes, but I don't think I ever made a conscious decision of what tone I would write. It all depended on my mood as I was writing. And what we're talking about to listeners is, at times, I would write letters to her as I was speaking to her today. Like, you are my two-year-old daughter. Or actually, now she's two, but, you know, you are 1 year and 5 months old, and I'm speaking to you in the terms I can. But sometimes I would imagine her at age 20 in college and reading the letter, and I would write to her from that age, like, what would a 20-year-old think? Or maybe not what a 20-year-old would think, but I could handle, take on more serious topics, or, you know, just write to her as a more mature person.
All right. Well, here, give us an example of another letter that...
One you want me to read, or just one in my head?
Well, no, that you can read for us that gives us a feel for a different tone, a different approach.
Well, this is a different tone. This is one we can talk more about, here we go. Dear Hillary, in the early 1990s, while I was attending the Berklee College of Music, I had an outgoing message on my answering machine that people seemed to enjoy. By the way, before voicemail, where people could leave messages directly on your phone, you needed to own a separate machine that would record incoming messages. If I didn't answer, you heard the following. You have called Boston's hottest phone sex line. To hear the sounds of a man and woman making love, press 1 now. To hear the sounds of two women making love, press 2 now. To hear the sounds of a man making love to a small household appliance, press 3 now. And immediately after that final now, I turned on a vacuum cleaner and shouted a scream of pain. Following that came the beep. On any given day, I would return home to have anywhere from 5 to 15 hang-ups, because people would call just to listen to the message and or play it for their friends. New callers would be laughing as they tried to leave their message. It was, as the kids say, silly, those kids in their wacky vernacular. After hearing it, a casual acquaintance once asked me, "Dude, what if your mom calls you?" I thought the question was odd and answered, "Well, she hears the message." It took me a while to realize what the person was getting at, because I had to remember a simple truth. Most people lie to their parents about who they are. Not because they're bad people, but because parents usually appreciate and participate in the lie. It's a give and take. The parents conveniently forget what it's like to be a teenager or young adult, and the teenagers or young adults pretend they're the little angels their parents always wanted.
Now, again, that letter has a very different subject matter than the first one, and that's a fairly tame example, I would say.
I don't know that it gets much worse than the book does. I don't remember what I've written at this point. It was a while ago, so...
Well, there was the AC/DC concert.
I had a little too much to drink and passed out and missed the entire concert I was in a porta potty, but I thought that again contained a nice life lesson.
Certainly a good life lesson.
Right. Yes. To sum up the story very quick, I didn't get naked, but I thought I needed to use the bathroom in that drunk state, so I got partially naked and then passed out. And what I was saying to her is, thank God cell phones didn't exist back then, because I don't know if I locked the door on that porta potty, so anybody could have just taken a picture of me and it would have been everywhere on the internet. So the lesson of that story was, be careful in the future, because there's a greater chance for embarrassment today than there was in my time.
And don't competitively drink vodka with your teenage friends.
That was also very dumb of me.
So I did, when I was reading those letters, I thought, when do you expect her to read this book? Because she will want to read it someday. Yeah. And she'll learn to read when she's, you know, seven.
Seven. Yeah, but by the time she's seven, I don't think this book will be talked about or, you know.
But it's going to be in your house.
It will
she's
be.
She's going to find it.
Maybe. It might be in the house. Maybe we can. It's not a matter of hiding it from her. It's just a matter of, I had planned on giving it to her maybe college. I guess, to be honest, I didn't really give much thought to a six-year-old seeing herself on the cover of a book and going, ooh, and flipping through it. But, you know, if that happens, I think some of the deeper content might go over her head. So I think she could read competitive vodka drinking and not really understand it. So it might be okay. I'm not positive. Now I'm regretting having written it. Can I go back in time and stop what I've done? I have no idea.
So that answers my question, though. I was curious about when you thought
Right.
She might want to read these letters.
Probably when she's out of the house and can be mortified by what I've written in the privacy of her own dorm room. Dad, I can't believe you wrote this. I'm so humiliated. This is embarrassing.
Who else do you imagine? I mean, you've had a lot of people reading the book already, but what other audience did you imagine in writing these letters?
I didn't really imagine an audience. Most of what I do for me. I can't get in my head and think, okay, who would really like this and write from that point of view? I just generally write and assume that it will be either ignored or, if not ignored, I'm not paying attention to catering to an audience. When it was finished, my wife said, you know, parents will like this, especially moms. Moms will like it because moms are readers and dads sit on the couch and watch football and scratch themselves. But moms, I think, is the target audience for this. That's the best I can do.
although you, I guess you don't make fun of your wife, but you do tease
speak
her.
Honestly. Yeah, I tease. Yeah, I can't think of anything specific off the top of my head, but a lot of people ask her, "Wow, it must be fun living with a comedian," and she's like, "Yeah," rolls her eyes. You know, if you like being constantly poked at and joked about and embarrassed on stage, sure. So she has a very thick skin. It's very nice.
I'm talking with Nathan Timmel. He's a stand-up comedian based in Iowa City. He spends a lot of time on the road. And when he was on the road during his daughter's second year of life, he started writing her letters. It turned into a book called It's Okay to Talk to Animals and Other Letters from Dad. You're welcome to join our conversation this hour as well. What's something you learned in the first couple of years of your child's life that you would want to share if you had a platform? You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Also coming up in about 20 minutes, we're going to talk about traveling and how it broadens one's horizon and can even change one's life. I'll talk to a woman who experienced travel when she was in college and became a travel writer, and also her friend who inspired her to travel in the first place. That's coming up in about 20 minutes. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'm talking with stand-up comedian Nathan Timmel. He's published a new book. It's called It's Okay to Talk to Animals and Other Letters from Dad. It's made up of letters he wrote home to his one-year-old daughter while he was on the road. And you're welcome to join our conversation this hour as well, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We all learn a lot from that first couple of years as parents. So if you have something you learned that you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you. And Nathan, one of the letters that you write is toward the end of the book. You wrote about your ambivalent feelings about becoming a father, and I think what you said...
I'm not sure they were ambivalent. I didn't want to be a
okay,
father.
Okay, well, that's exactly what you said. That's exactly what you said. And so
that's pretty straightforward. That's not for me. No. Kids, little waste of time. Little, ugh.
And you also wrote basically that you continued to feel that way through much of your wife's first pregnancy.
Oh, yeah. She's getting bigger, and I'm thinking, here it comes. My life is going to be over. I'm going to have to take care of this mewling little creature that'll be time-demanding. I'm not going to get to do everything I want to do.
So were you really that scared?
I wasn't scared at all. I was just, there's a difference between fear and just not wanting, and I did not want. And I never wanted kids my entire life.
Really?
And, yep. And I was absolutely 100% wrong in that attitude. The instant I became a father, I mean, they say it's different when it's your own. And maybe it is, but I've changed completely. I was noticing that. I flew in from Vegas several days ago, and there was a crying baby on the plane. And instead of being that irritated, oh, this baby's crying guy I used to be, I was just like, oh, that poor baby. And I'm, like, wishing I could, you know, hold it and pat it on the back and... You know, I've just completely done a 180 on kids. I smile at them. I make faces at them now. And I guess the only thing I have toward my old attitude was just basically too much to go into here, an unhappy childhood. My parents had an unhappy marriage, and maybe I took some of that on me. So I just look at kids as a burden and just enjoyed my freedom too much. And a lot of guys have that thought. And I mean, I talked to a friend. We bumped into his wife was pregnant, and he said, you know, I'm nervous. I'm scared. My life will be over. You know, I'm here at the gym. This is where I bumped into him. I was at the gym. He goes, I'm at the gym. I can leave work and go to the gym whenever I want, and or I can go golfing. I said, dude, you are right. Your life is over, but you don't care. You absolutely don't care. You look back on your own life and think, wow, I could be playing video games right now, but I don't want to. I'd much rather be on the floor, you know, having my hair pulled, or, you know, being hit with a doll, or whatever it is the kid is doing that you're watching. It is a million times more fun than whatever you were doing before it was born. So, yeah, I didn't want to be a father, and I was absolutely in the wrong.
I think most of us who become parents kind of go through that major epiphany. Obviously, it doesn't happen for everyone. But
right.
For the vast majority of people, when they become parents, there's this moment where they realize, you know, I not only love this creature more than I love anyone else in the world, but suddenly everything else that I love has become so much less important to me.
Absolutely.
Because this child is the center of my universe right now. But it's funny because now I wanted to be a mom. I was
right.
Very excited about it. But people would tell me about this magical epiphany, and I still, as much as I anticipated it and I wanted it, I still couldn't grasp it until it happened to me.
Yeah, yeah. And you said most people, and I think a majority, but I still, it was several months ago or maybe a year ago, there was someone that wrote a blog post or an article or why not to be a parent, and it was everything I just said, but the opposite view. Is like, oh, you're on the floor and there are dolls and there are whatever, and don't do it, and, you know, it takes too much time. And I'm just sitting reading it going, what is wired incorrectly in your head that you're thinking this? I mean, what went wrong inside you that when your child was born, you didn't flip that switch and immediately want to sacrifice everything for that child? Because all the child wants is love. I mean, my son, I have two kids now. I wrote this to my daughter. I have a son that's 5 months old. And this morning, he woke up at 6 a.m. something, and the instant I walk into the room, I mean, the instant, he just starts smiling. That's it. And how can you not be washed over in love when you have an infant that recognizes you and just starts to smile because you are there? You have to respond to that. And the people that don't, they are wired incorrectly. And I will flat out say that. There is no argument. You can't say, well, some people are different. No, if you are not prepared to sacrifice everything for your child, you are wrong.
It's interesting that although you didn't want to become a dad, you and your wife worked extremely hard to become parents.
Yes. We didn't.
Tell me
do
about
things,
that process.
Sure. We did not do things the natural, old-fashioned way. We used in vitro fertilization for both of our children because I don't remember the medical terms or what the long and the short of it is my wife, her eggs and her ovaries, they would never leave the ovaries. From what I understand, they leave and go in the fallopian tube where they can be inseminated when you make love. But hers would never leave. So they would grow and they were very healthy, and then they would shrink and just they would never. And so they had to, after a couple of years of drugs, progesterone and other fertility drugs and insemination, natural, either way, 2 years of trying to do it through various programs, they realized they had to go in and actually harvest the eggs and then put them in a petri dish, I guess, and then take a sample from me and so grow them, start to grow them in a petri dish and then replant them back in my wife.
So through all of that process, which is not an easy one for your wife.
No, she was not having fun, devastated.
Right.
She really... To her, she said it was really an attack on her womanhood because her whole life she had been heard, she had been told, you know, and heard, use protection. Women get pregnant. If you have unprotected sex, you'll get pregnant. And here she is in a marriage wanting to have a child, and she can't get pregnant. And she felt in some ways like a failure, like she was doing something wrong. And it wasn't her fault at all. It was just a biological hiccup is all.
The question that I have is just, you know, she's working so hard to get pregnant and spending so much time and so much emotional strain and all of this. And at the same time, you're feeling like you don't want to be a dad. Did that cause conflict?
A little, but not a lot, because I was never I don't know how I describe it in the book. I don't remember what I've written. It's very sad. But I was never, I think I was more negative in my speech here a minute ago than I ever was. And I would make little jokes, but I would never harp on it. I would never say anything, you know, cold. She's like, oh, this isn't working. Well, good, because I don't want to be a dad. You know, I was never mean about it. I was always supportive because that was the thing going in. Before we got married, that was the deal breaker. It was, you know, if we're going to do this, if we're going to get married, I want to be a mom. And I'm like, all right, you know, I love you. And if that's what it takes to be with you, I will do that sacrifice. So I sort of went in eyes open, like, all right, I'm going to be a dad. I'm not happy about it, but this is what's going to happen. Fine. Fair enough. So it was more just even keeled negativity than outright, you know, bleh, parenthood. Yeah. You know? And so I tried to be as supportive as possible and make little jokes here and there, which she didn't appreciate the jokes too often, but I don't think I was ever attacking.
I'm talking with comedian Nathan Timmel. His new book is called It's Okay to Talk to Animals and Other Letters from Dad. And Nathan, you mentioned having an unhappy childhood and your parents not being in a happy marriage. Were you scared about what kind of dad you'd be?
No, and I don't know why. It just never, I think maybe I'm old enough now, like I'm in my 40s and my children are both under 2 years old. So I think that might have affected me more if I had become a father in my 20s or even 30s. But I think the older I got, the more self-aware I became. And once I figured out the whole childhood thing and my parents' marriage and realized, okay, it's not my fault or anything they did. You know, once you come to terms with that, you're fine. I think if I had become a father earlier in life, I might have been more worried about being a bad dad. But I think once you can put this perspective of life into focus, you're fine.
A lot of the letters that you have written to your daughter, Hillary, do share important life lessons and really a philosophical approach to life. I mean, one of the letters you wrote about is how when you had new neighbors move into a house next to yours and they wanted to put up a fence, how your wife approached them and said, you know, we want a fence too. We'll pay for part of this side of your fence so that, you know, we can work together, and how that was the beginning of a tremendous friendship. So were there, when you were writing the letters, was there a lesson you wanted to share that gave you the idea for the letter, or did the lesson grow out of a story you wanted to tell?
Probably the latter, that I was just telling stories because you left off an important ending of that story. I think there's a lesson in there. Like you said, my wife wanted to, because if you don't have a house, you don't know that everyone shares fences. You don't just put up a fence. And so I was trying to tell a funny story because the second half of that, if you remember, is later on in the neighborhood, a different house several blocks away was being built. And the builder realized that the house next door that was already up put their fence, I think, a foot or two, 18 inches across the property line. And the new owner complained and was yelling, you know, get that fence off my property. And the owner of the fence was like, hey, I'm sorry, it wasn't my fault. They put it in wrong. Is there anything we can do? No, get that fence off my property line. So what the owner of the fence did is pulled it 6 or 12 inches back into their own property line at their own expense. So when the new owner of the house was finally built and wanted to put a fence up, he goes, hey, you pulled the fence in. I can't attach to it. And they're like, yeah, that's right. If you want to put a fence up, you have to pay the full cost because you didn't just not sweat the small stuff to steal from another book.
Right.
And so I was just telling a funny story of how someone got screwed over by their own negativity than I was trying to say, always be good to people.
Except, I mean, there was a good lesson in there as well because, of course, those two people have to live next to each other for a very long time. They started out
on a really bad foot.
Right. And I'm guessing they probably don't hang out now.
Probably not. And I thought it was hilarious that the person number one pulled the fence onto their own property line saying, all right, if you really want me to move it, I will make sure you're not allowed to use it. And the second person had to put up a fence at great expense just because they were rude.
And the flip side, the story that you were telling now, the neighbors that your neighbors, your new neighbors, are now like family.
Yeah, we called her Aunt Shelby, you know, like literally when Hillary was born, you know, just out of the kindness of that term, not any blood relation.
Were there some things that you wanted to make sure to share with Hillary or just to share in your letters that It took you a long time to learn?
Absolutely. The one that comes to mind is dating and finding love. And going back to my parents and going back to what you said earlier about me being a dad, I went through a couple of very damaging relationships that almost I knew right away that this is wrong. But I'm going to go in full force anyway because I can make it work because, you know, you don't give up. And when it all ended, I would look back and go, I really should have walked away. And so I told her about a couple of those relationships and just little stories, very pithy things that we should tell our kids that I never heard or that maybe we don't. Just find someone that loves you. Don't pine for anyone. Be in a relationship that's 50-50, not one that's 70-30, where you're giving and the other person is taking. You know, just little things like that where respect yourself. I don't know that enough kids hear that.
A lot of us would really like to spare our children the pain that we experienced growing up.
I don't think
up.
It happens, but at least you can give them the guideposts and then they go out and discover their own pain anyway.
Well, and you write about that in some of the letters. Yes, we realize there will be hard lessons that you learn on your own. Right now, we seem to live in this culture. I mean, you've written a blog. Your wife thinks that women are the audience for your book. You probably are familiar with the world of mommy blogs out there. So many women writing about their experiences, and some of them are really tremendously wonderful. Great stories. Parents love to read about other parents who have learned things and have had similar experiences. But there's also this kind of mommy war that people like to talk about. And I try not to buy into it, and I think a lot of people don't buy into it. But there is this element of, you know, you get into your own world and you feel like the way that you're parenting is the best way to parent or the right way to parent. Did you ever have to think, wait a minute, you know, I feel strongly about this, but I don't want to tell people how to be a dad or how to be a mom?
Well, I think there's a flip side to that, too, where I know people that are feel the reverse. They're like, oh, my God, I'm doing everything wrong. They'll read one of these mommy blogs and think, I'm a horrible parent. I'm not as good as this blogger. So I think there are both sides. But to answer the question, no, I don't think I ever... The most definitive thing I will say is what I said on the program. If you don't flip a switch and go from I don't want to be a parent to I will do absolutely everything for my kid, you're wrong. I will make a definitive statement there that if you don't love your kid, you're a bad person. But as to anything else that I wrote in the book, it wasn't it's not a guidepost. It's not a way of saying you must live by my lessons, because I don't think I wrote it as a way of saying you say there's a lesson in everything, but it's very light-handed, or like I said, I'm trying to tell a story, right? And if you get something out of it, well, all the better. But if you just take it on the surface as a funny story about two idiots that couldn't agree on a fence, then that's all you took out of it, and that's fine too.
How old is your daughter now?
2 and a half.
Okay.
My children were born my just under 2 years apart, by 1 week. They're 1 week apart, so he'll turn one and she'll turn three a week later.
All right. When you think back to the man you were 2.5 years ago, do you feel like a different person in some ways?
Absolutely. I don't know that I can describe the changes other than, like I said, I'm more open, I smile more, I'm happier. Not that I was unhappy before, but, you know, if on a scale of 1 to 10, you're an 8, you become a 9. Like, you just, it kicks your heart open. Being a parent, it expands your soul. It does everything positive. There's anything you might have thought might be negative beforehand. Like I mentioned, like, oh, I don't want to be a parent. I have to clean poopy diapers. And the instant you see your first poopy diaper, you just dive in. You don't care. It's just, I'm a better person because of it.
I've read so many studies, and, you know, there are always conflicting articles, but there were a lot of articles coming out a couple of years ago about how having kids, parents are less happy than people who don't have kids. And I found it really interesting because a lot of the stuff that they were writing about in these articles is, you know, of course you're busy and you don't get enough sleep and you're stretched thinner and you're, you know, you're spending more money and all of these things. But it didn't take into account the long game, you know, and all of the happiness and the joy and the meaning that you get from life.
Well, and what I guess I'm absolutely confused and a loss for words when they say less happy. What criteria were they looking at for happy? Like, oh, it's Friday and I don't get to go out and get drunk with the fellas, or there's this movie I want to see that's more important than being a parent, and I can't go to the, you know, see this movie. I mean, you want to talk happiness. As I mentioned earlier, either my son walking into the room and seeing him, or my daughter coming home and going, "Daddy," and bum rushing me and giving me a hug. That's happiness right there. That's joy. That is love. That's more important than I can think of than, "Oh, I don't get to take the dream vacation on a cruise ship." You know, that's petty.
Nathan, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Nathan Timmel, his new book is It's Okay to Talk to Animals and Other Letters from Dad. You can find out more about him on his website, nathantimmel.com. You can also follow him on Twitter. And can you see Russia from your house?
Sometimes.
All right. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.